2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Taco Tuesday, PGA DFS podcast, presented to you by DFSArmy.com. We've got a special episode for you guys as this is the week of a brand new event on the PGA Tour, the Rocket Mortgage Classic. And I recently just spent the entire day at the golf course checking out the new course that will be they'll be tried out for the first time on the PGA Tour as the PGA Tour comes back to Michigan for the first time since it's been a little while, like over a decade, I think. They had the Buick Classic in a different part of Michigan, not Detroit. This is the first Detroit-based event that the PGA Tour has ever hosted, and we'll get into that in just a second. First, as usual, I gotta let you know that at DFSArmy.com, that's where you can go to check out all of the content that I'll be referencing throughout this podcast. We have just been smashing lately as far as huge wins go. I just had a $100,000 and $40,000 win today, and yeah, over the last few weeks, it's just been five-digit wins left and right by Army members. We're clogging up the spaces on not only golf, but all the sports leaderboards. If you play a lot of DFS, especially on the mobile app on DraftKings, you just like to scroll through leaderboards. I guarantee you've seen us around. We're sure making a lot of heck out there, and we're just gonna keep doing that. And you might as well join. And if you can't beat us, you might as well join. We've got many different sports, almost every single sport that DraftKings offers, even stuff like WNBA and arena football. I mean, we cover it all. And I do NASCAR and PGA specifically, but we've got all sorts of different coaches that expertise in their own sports, some of the best players in the world. And it's all included in one low price package. It can't really be beaten, so DFSArmy.com, you get the lineup optimizer, the research station, which I'll be referencing throughout this pod. Just one of the biggest sources of information out there, just an awesomely curated source of content. And of course, I'll be referencing all the stats throughout this podcast. And, of course, the Domination Station lineup optimizer, very handy. Got a lot of new tools coming out for that. It's been it's making it really powerful. And you get coaching, private coaching, access to easy notes and breakdowns for every slate, ownership projections, you name it, we've got it. DFSArmy.com. Go ahead and become a member today. Promo code TACO will get you a lifetime 20% off discount. And of course, that will support the pod. And excited about bringing this pod to you guys this week. Not going to be the longest pod. I'm going to try to keep it short. I'm very tired. It's late at night. It's like Tuesday night. I need to get this pod out here. I ended up spending all day at the course. It was just really interesting, just following people around, learning a lot, hearing tidbits. About this course. So the Detroit Golf Club, they'll be the host of the event this week. Of course, you've never been there. It's in an oddly bad part of town. I'm used to the events I've been to before, used to them being on the very the nice part of town. We got shuttled in from the old Michigan State Fairgrounds, which are just a total dump, honestly. They're not the prettiest thing I've ever seen. I don't know what they're doing with that there, but we get shuttled from there to the golf course. Of course, Got mom's spaghetti all over my sweater already, because it's right there on 8 Mile in Detroit. And, shoot, on the way out, there was just a big police scene, the, you know, police tape, active crime scene, all that, and I was like, Jesus, man, I got the full Detroit experience right there. And, it's a very different event than some of the other ones I've been to. You know, not very much seating, like VIP seating. The 18th hole has maybe like 100 seats on it, 200 seats. It's weird. Not as many big, you know, VIP lounges and stuff. And there's a whole half of the course that doesn't have, like, you know, amenities, really. I didn't end up wandering out that far. Just because it's a lot of walking. Yeah, I wasn't going to walk this entire course, and I just walked around all day anyway, and, you know, exhausted from that, but I did get to see a good majority of the course, and, you know, I know a lot of people are trying to break down the course from, you know, just pictures of the course or just descriptions or whatever. Was nice to be able to, you know, get some boots on the ground, go see it. It's proven helpful in the past when I've done this before. And, yeah, the basic takeaway from this course is that they are just going to crush this thing. I don't think I'm the only person that thinks that. You look at this course and it's very flat. You know, this is right by my stomping grounds. And, you know, I'm located in northern Indiana, northeast Indiana. So it wasn't all that far, maybe two and a half hour drive up to Detroit. And the conditions are somewhat similar. Very windy early on in the day. Had gusts at some points are up to like 30 miles an hour. These gusts. You got kind of the lake effect weather going on there. Being right by Lake Erie there. Other than that though, it's a very easy course. You know, the very wide fairways and the rough does not seem penal whatsoever. It looked like very easy rough. The fairways are tree lined, but when you look at the kind of trees, it's not like other courses where, like, you know, Quail Hollow, for example, I went there, it was tree lined, but, you know, the trees, you know, some of them were like, you know, willows and stuff, and, they'd reach the ground, you know, and you could get lost out there. This isn't a course where you can really get lost at. Maybe if you go too far, you end up in another fairway. Not very many patches of brush, you know, a little bit, but most of that was like way out past like the cart path and stuff. These trees, you're not going to see any branches up until you get like 20, 30 feet high. You might hit a tree off of a drive or something. Some of them do overhang the fairway a little bit, but launch angles are just going to be low enough for the most part that trees aren't really going to come into play. And unless you land right behind a tree, they're not really that penal to land out in the rough there. Again, the grass, the rough from what I saw is very thin, you know, very easy to get some good lies out of. I saw a lot of guys, well, I didn't see many guys actually hit it into the rough. You know, most of them were hitting the fairway pretty easily. But the shots I did see out of the rough, it looked really clean. There are not many bunkers on this course. Yeah, the greens have a bit of undulation to them on some holes, but for the most part, you know, there aren't like huge drop-off areas and stuff. They did make the par 3 holes. They look a little bit tougher than some of these other ones, but a lot of the holes on the course, again, not bunker covered. You know, very few bunkers, and the bunkers they do have seem pretty shallow and very easy to get out of. There were a stark contrast to the tournament that this tournament is kind of sort of replacing in the Firestone Country Club Bridgestone Invitational. Pretty much how that works is, you know, that was a WGC event. Now it's being replaced sort of by the FedEx St. Jude, which used to be a WGC event. And now they're adding in this event, also the 3M in Minneapolis. But this is pretty much taking up the spot where we would go to Bridgestone. That's also pretty close, right there in Ohio. So, you know, they just went to the other side of the rivalry there. So they're putting this event in Michigan, which doesn't make a lot of sense. Detroit golf is not really that big of a thing. I mean, if you go to the event, they try to make it seem like that, but half of the year you can't even play. It's too cold. I heard talk of like bluegrass. You know, that is the general type of grass that's around this area, but the course is bent grass, fairways bent grass, even the greens bent grass. I talked with a greenskeeper. He had told me he majored in like grass studying. So I'm like, this is the guy I got to talk to about these greens. He pretty much said the course was renovated completely a couple of years ago, and they installed some POA, and then the bent grass just came in, and now it's pretty much a mixture of POA and bent grass on the greens, but it really favors, it's mostly bent grass. It's pretty much a standard course, you know. The one course we have here in Indiana that's seen PGA Tour play, out in Carmel, Crooked Stick, that's a Pete Dye design. And, you know, that's just straight up bent grass everything. Bridgestone is bent grass. You know, that's pretty much what you're going to get around here. The municipals and stuff, they'll have, like bluegrass. But you can't have that in a PGA Tour event because you can't cut it low enough. So, you know, the nicer courses around here always try to install bent grass. And it used to be quite the luxury grass. Now it's just kind of meh. You know, POA and Bermuda. Really the preferred kinds, but Bermuda doesn't grow around here, obviously. And, you know, POA is just on the greens. You know, it's more, usually more of a West Coast kind of deal, but they didn't, you can install POA, and, you know, whatever kind of greens you want. But of course, like I said, the bent grass just kind of comes in and takes over. One bad thing about bent grass is you will see some, like, dead spots, especially out in the summer. That's just, that's what comes with it. It's really easy to maintain and stuff. Looking past the greens here, the grass, because, you know, not really too much to be mentioned there. Like, not a lot of actionable information here. I guess the putting splits to look at would be, like, I guess bent grass more than anything. But, you know, the main takeaway here is that this course is going to be really easy, and it is going to be quite the birdie fest. When asking around with what I'd ask people what they thought the winning scores would be. I heard a lot of talk that it could be, you know, up towards minus 25. We're talking like almost Desert Classic or Dean and DeLuca, you know, that event levels of ease. Like, it's going to be one of the easiest courses that we've seen. It's a par 72, and there are four par fives. Two of them are very, very easy. One is extremely long, and I guess that's a spiritual predecessor of, you know, the now gone par 5 course from Bridgestone, the 670 yarder. This one's like a 650 yarder, so it's kind of the spiritual successor. I think that's what I meant to say, spiritual successor of that hole there. So, you know, the super long hole lives on, but there is a third par 5, and it's also short, but it's got water right in the front, and then it has one nice big fat bunker on the right. I didn't see anybody go for the green on that one. It's reachable, but it just seems like it would be really dumb to go for the green on that one unless you, like, really need to make a cut or something. That's the 14th hole there. It's only like 550 yards, but I didn't, even Dustin Johnson laid it up. I didn't see a single person going for it on that hole, even in the practice round. So they'll probably play like an easy birdie three shot hole. And, yeah, the par fives, it's going to kind of make it, they're not as easy as the Canadian Open, where everybody's eagling and stuff, but we will see some eagles on the two easy ones, and there'll be a constant source of easy birdies on, you know, the other par fives. Maybe, you know, not the super long one, but still three very scoreable par fives, and some really short par fours, too. It's another thing about this course. This is the first course I've ever seen that has more short or sub 400 yard par fours than other, you know, par four types. The medium and long par fours are usually the, you know, the most common ones in golf, but they only have two of each on this course. So you might want to look at people that excel in that particular area, and they're going to rate out better most weeks. But this week, not really going to be the case. You're going to be wanting to look at the shorter par four scoring, but of course the short par five scoring is where our money is going to be made, you know, on DraftKings, especially with the eagles, and, you know, eagle upside is just so huge because it's worth so much more than the birdie. And you know, birdies and eagles are worth way, way more than you lose with bogeys and double bogeys, like way more. So as the birdies count the scoring, we should see a really high scoring event here. And the real challenge, I guess, would be the par threes. Like I said, they made the greens a little more challenging on those par three holes. But two of them are like, what, 160 yards? Like, that's like pitching wedge for these guys. 9-iron maybe. So they're gonna be pretty easy to hit the greens. Yeah, the greens, they're kind of soft. The area's gotten a lot of rain, although, you know, it's been very dry, very windy. You'd figure that the course would be a lot harder and firmer than it is, but it still seemed like a pretty soft course, not a ton of roll. I think people are going to be able to just absolutely pin seek. Saw it a lot today. You're really able to just be aggressive, and off the tee you can just bomb and gouge it, because like I said, the fairways are not, it's nice to be in the fairways, but it's not mandatory really, and it's not like a challenging course either. It's not like a Pete Dye design where, you know, certain holes are set up to where you have to place it in one way. They're really straightforward. Most of them are just straight shots, wide open fairway, you just hit it right in that fairway and you plop it on with a wedge on the second shot. Real easy stuff. So unless some wind picks up here or something, I really don't see it being much of a problem for these guys. It should be a birdie fest. I mean, the cut line, we're looking like -2, -3, maybe something like that. I could be wrong about this, but that's what it seemed like. And that's what most people at the course were saying. Just surprised at how easy it looks, especially people have been to a lot of events and seen a lot of courses. This one, it doesn't really have the PGA sort of feel to it. It's not like polished. It almost looks like a normal course, really. And that's what it was until recently. It's got, you know, all the amenities and stuff, just not to the extent that the other events had. I expect more of the public to be at this course than a lot of the VIPs, I guess. That's what it seems like they're setting it up for. The only thing that really seemed like a PGA event at this course is like the clubhouse. But yeah, so that's the course for you. As far as key stats to attack, you know, no course history this week. We're going to want to look at, you know, par 72 scoring, weak fields. It's a very weak field. It's got Dustin Johnson and then the sponsor boy Ricky Fowler up top. After that, you know, Woodland and Matsuyama, of course, you know, they're up there for obvious reasons. And then it's just a free fall. Like, Snedeker and Reavie are the next highest priced on DraftKings. Like, it's a huge drop in talent. You got a lot of guys who are usually priced $1,000 lower than they are, just being priced up just because the field is so weak. So, looking at weak fields and the field rank splits. And another thing to consider is easy courses. You know, this looks like it's going to be a very easy course. So that's something I would definitely look into there. And of course, birdies are better gained. Very important. Going to be all over that stat. Again, with the birdie fest, really looking at that. You know, you see guys like Dustin Johnson, Hideki Matsuyama, even Rory Sabatini, oddly enough, just killing it in that category. It's going to make them kind of chalky plays. Honestly, I think a lot of people are going to be looking at birdie or better percentage. You know, the last few weeks I've recommended like double bogey or worse avoidance. You can be a little more aggressive here, honestly. And I think around the green can be like a punt category. I think the last few weeks we've kind of factored that in a little bit more with like smaller greens and, you know, a lot of sand around the fairways and stuff. Not the case here. I did not see many greenside bunkers at all. And they seem, they're very shallow, like I had said. Just very easy to get out of. I don't think that scrambling is going to be that big of a deal. The rough's not too crazy. The only thing I could think of is the, you know, there's word of like the union members striking there. Like the groundskeepers and the electricians and engineers and stuff, I guess. They're planning on striking on a Thursday, and maybe they'll just refuse to, I don't know, cut the lawn and let the grass grow out or something. But it's nothing like that thick POA that we've seen in recent weeks. That's just really hard to get out of. This seems like, you know, lies are going to be quite favorable, and it should be really easy to rebound. just a very flat course. I mean, this is, you know, the Midwest, just flat in general. But yeah, just I don't know. I think I'm not the only person that thinks that this is just going to be an absolute birdie fest. We're going to be looking to avoid the Jim Furyks of the world, the par makers. You know, you're just that type of player. As far as like driving the ball goes, it is a shorter course on most holes. I know it has some, obviously, like that par five. That par five is so long, you're not going to be able to drive it in two, so it almost takes driving distance out of the equation, just forcing it to be a three-shot hole. Not too many places where driving distance is going to give you like a crazy advantage, so a lot of these shots in are just going to be easy wedges. I guess I'd look to just overall total driving or stroke scanned off the tee, but stroke scanned approach, again, just going to be a core stat, like the core stat. And whenever it's a really easy birdie scoring kind of course, we want to look to guys who can pin seek, not too worried about putting. It seemed like the stint meter's around 11 or so, 10.5, 11, 11.5, depends on who you asked. But not the fastest greens you've ever seen, pretty manageable. Bent grass isn't bumpy like POA. It still has a little bit of that POA in there, but I didn't notice any sort of bumps. The putts are pretty pure. There's a little bit of undulation in some spots, a little bit of movement, but nothing as crazy as some other courses out there that actually have really, really hard greens. Should be just a straightforward, simple birdie fest of an event, but of course it's really hard to know without a historical precedent here. Just going by observations and going off of, you know, asking people a lot smarter with that sort of stuff than I am, and just getting a sense from like the putting coaches and stuff at the putting greens and all that. So that's a course for you. Let's just dive right into the plays here. I would love to go to bed, honestly. So just gonna make this whole pod free. I'll probably end up going like an hour anyways, because you know how I do, but I'm just gonna dive right into the plays here. Dustin Johnson, 5-1, $12,000. You've listened to my podcast for any amount of time. Whenever we see a guy at 12K, I always like to make sure that he is 5-1. 6-1 is cool, but 5-1 is nice. And it's pretty much always Dustin Johnson. So this is like classic Dustin Johnson at the Canadian Open, like smash him. He's going to be chalky, but he is like far and away the best play in the field. And the adjusted implied odds, which are adjusted for rake. And boy, is there a lot of rake in golf. Just straight up golf props, like it's insane. But a 10.8 implied a win percentage. Second on the board is Ricky Fowler at 5.6%. So he has like double the chance of anyone else of winning this thing. His top 20 percentage implied is 60%. He's just super solid, consistent. His consistency is actually insane, and he finishes in the top 10% of fields. So he beats 90% of golfers 60% of the time. That is absolutely nutty. Way better than anyone else in this field. He is just far and away the best. And, you know, on top of everything else, he has been putting awfully, just horribly, over the last few events, especially last event. He was just terrible at the U.S. Open. Still squeaked out a T35 finish. Tee to green, you know, off the tee approach, just clicking as always. Really strong in weak fields, strong in par 72s. It's Dustin Johnson. He should be the, if you can afford him, just go for it. You know, he's not like Koepka, where he's kind of hit or miss. This guy never misses, man. He's he's super safe, super consistent, you know. Whenever he plays these weaker fields, I've noticed he always brings it. Like I said, 91% field rank in 6 weak field events so far in the season. Just crushing it, dude. Really safe play. And you go on to Ricky Fowler, who I imagine will be a lot lower owned. He actually had a larger gallery than Dustin Johnson, which is kind of funny. I think he must have holed out something. I heard the crowd going nuts for him. Maybe it was a long putt or something. I don't know. I wasn't really there, but his face is plastered all over this event. Like, he is the Rocket Mortgage guy. He tells people that, you know, instead of using your brain, you should just push a button and get a loan for a house, because that's how life works, I guess. So I don't know if that's going to add to anything, you know, like, you know, sometimes you notice, like, say, the guy that won the Masters the year before has a lot of obligations and stuff, and here the sponsor obligations are pretty obvious for Fowler. You know, his face is everywhere. This is on every Rocket Mortgage commercial and that. But really, his form has been just, you know, missed the cut at the Charles Schwab. Not very great. It was even worse than Dustin Johnson at the U.S. Open. His approach game is pretty weak for someone priced up this high. And getting, you know, his number one strokes gained stat recently has been around the green, which I don't think is going to be that great here. I really don't like the play, but of all the studs, he's going to be the lowest owned. That's pretty much what he's got going for him. And you've got Gary, who just made SpongeBob very happy at the U.S. Open, winning that thing over Brooks Koepka, which it kind of makes it even more amazing, the fact that he was able to block Brooks of his three-peat by just being better. He was so calm and cool and collected on that Sunday. Now, sure, he's been, you know, he's been doing all the hullabaloo that comes with winning the U.S. Open, interviews here, there, and everywhere. I don't really care too much about that sort of stuff. He's number one of all the studs in fantasy point per hole. You know, he's really just been solid for a good amount of time now. Actually, if you look at his last five events, other than the eighth at the PGA Championship and, of course, the win, the U.S. Open, you know, 52nd at the Memorial, 74th, the Wells Fargo, 32nd at the Masters, you know, with only 80 in the field, not like the greatest finish, missed the cut at the Valspar. You know, his form had kind of fallen off, but if you go back any further than that, his form was like rock solid. Tons of top tens. Looks like he had about, yeah, he's had 8 top tens since the PGA Championship last year, and that is a lot. It's actually more than that. It's 9, I think. He's got that crazy upside. In the weaker field, he kind of really does deserve to be priced up where he's at. Although on FanDuel, Matsuyama is more expensive than him, as he should be. For some reason, Matsuyama's way cheaper on DraftKings, and that's just kind of silly. It's going to end up with him being the chalk, but I do see the 69% field rank in weak fields, and of course, I'm obligated to say nice, but it's actually not very nice. All the other studs are in the 90s, and that's in 8 events played in weak fields, and he does have some like pretty bad miscuts at weak fields. You know, some of them I think were at courses are a little bit harder. This one's pretty easy. You know, at easy courses, he's tends to do fairly well. But you know, strokes gained approach, it's been just on fire for him over the last 10 rounds. Almost 2 strokes gained approach per round. That's insane. Actually, not really gaining strokes off the tee like he usually does. He's been dialing it in with his approaches, and just finally putting well after, you know, a good while of not being a very good putter. He's gained 0.5 strokes putting per round over his last 10, whereas he was losing over his last 25, last 50. So Gary Woodland, good GPP play, I think. I wouldn't play him in cash, but probably good GPP play. I should get a fair amount of ownership, though, just for lack of options. You've got Hideki Matsuyama, 10,200, 11.3 on FanDuel, 100 more than Woodland there. Probably a much better price for him. So he's just been rock solid, made every single cut this year. He has a streak going of top 25 finishes at full fields. So he's got that going on for him. 3rd in projected round score, 7th in projected fantasy points per round. 84%. Field rank over his last 13 events played, super, super steady. His consistency is getting, you know, to the, like, Dustin Johnson point, and stroke scanned approach has just been solid the whole way through. That's really what's been pushing him in this direction. The only thing I see falling off recently, really, is his off-the-tee work, but I don't know. I'm way more interested in that approach game. It's not as sick as Woodland's has been in the short term, but long term, you know, he's probably the best ball striker in this entire field, outside of maybe Dustin Johnson. He's going to be super chalk, I think, like 25 to 30% owned on DraftKings at least, maybe not on FanDuel. So I might be more inclined to play him on FanDuel just for ownership's sake. But really, you know, I'll try to get like some cross-site hedging with him, pick him on draft.com, or, you know, whatever other sites you may use. That's the one I use usually for the cross-site hedging. He's number one in the field in birdies or better gaining four to the field, almost like 3.9. That's even better than Dustin Johnson's 3.6. And those two are far and away better than anyone else in the entire field, like by a whole extra birdie that they're gaining on the field. So also fantasy points gained right there with Dustin Johnson, 25 fantasy points gained to the field on average in, got 28 events played. So you're comparing to any random ass player or just the average fantasy point output, you can expect him to have about 25 more, just, you know, cash game lock. I think, the move is probably to play him in cash and just fade him in GPP and pray. But I'd honestly, I'll put him in like the good chalk sort of area. I really do just like, Matsuyama this week. Even though I probably shouldn't, you know, he's going to be so chalky, but you know, it just feels really good to roster Matsuyama. And I just like the guy a whole lot. I like yelling Matsuyama. I hear a lot of people yell that after he hits, and it is just wild to see him hitting with such a goofy swing, that pause at the top. But after him, you've got Brant Snedeker, $9,900. He's been a little bit of a disaster lately, honestly. Losing strokes approach and off the tee, just gaining it all in the short game. Not interested in that play at all. He's going to be very low owned, but I really don't care. You know, he's $300 cheaper than Matsuyama. Matsuyama is currently 11-1. Snedeker is 30-1. Yeah. I mean, like, enough said. And he should be doing much worse than he has been. Like, at the US Open, he really shouldn't have made the cut. He was trying everything he could. He needed, like, two separate, like, chip-ins just to make the cut. And then he was just garbage on the weekend. Didn't look all that great at the Travelers. I think he started gaining some strokes approach and all, but just way overpriced, I think. Like, this is where the field, like, there should be even more of a price gap between these guys. There's such a huge drop-off here. You've got last week's winner, Ches Reavie, who also finished third in the U.S. Open. Irons are scorching hot, it would seem. The final round, he didn't really need to do any of that, so it kind of blew his numbers now. But over the first few rounds, he was just destroying it with the irons, and that's what really pushed him. 78% driving accuracy as well. Pretty disgusting there. Not huge on the fantasy scoring, though. 41st in the field in projected DraftKings points per round. So, you know, kind of probably going to be a fade for me. He has better odds than Snedeker, considerably. And I think the ownership's going to stick around just because, you know, that... You know, he came off a win. People usually don't like playing guys coming off a win all that much, but the week before he was third, so he even has some top 20s going back to like the PGA Championship where he finished T14 and the Wells Fargo Championship. You know, he had that streak there for a little while where he was kind of crappy, but if you look back further, he's a very streaky guy. When he's on, he's on. When he's off, he's off. And it seems like he is very much on right now. But $9,700, that price is insane. That is, wow, what a price jump. Holy crap. $10,900 on FanDuel. Like, wow, this field is weak. You got Ryan Moore at $9,500. Again, kind of flabbergasted by that price, but there's really no one else to fill this gap here. Approach game has been solid. Results have been pretty solid, and actually is better in projected round score and fantasy points per round than Reavie by a good margin here, but I don't know. Ryan Moore, last year, he was just so incredibly disappointing all season long that I'm kind of skeptical of him, his form. You know, he had a pretty awful miscut at the PGA Championship. Didn't look good at the Byron Nelson. Was looking good last week, looking like he was going to come in the top 10. Kind of fell apart a little bit at the end there, but he did birdie a decent amount. Really short off the tee, just like Snedeker, just like Reavie. Like, this is just such a weird zone, and no one's going to pick from the zone, I don't think. You've got Patrick Reed at $9,300, a guy that people have been avoiding like crazy. Fourth in projected round score, and I do believe, yeah, he ranks third in medium length par fours, but it's actually, you know, there are only two on the course, and there's usually a lot more than that, usually about four or five, so kind of working against him, but he is good at the short par fives, long par fours, and that's where a lot of these holes are going to be, so that's kind of why he's popping there. Not so much in fantasy point scoring, like he's fourth in projected round score, but 15th in projected fantasy points per round, and his finishes have been just so crappy lately. Fell apart again over the weekend at the Travelers, ended up finishing T30 after looking like he was, you know, in line to finally post a top 10. Just the results have been trash. Over his last eight events, played a 58% field rank, not good at all. Just the options are so freaking slim here. You've got Kevin Kisner at $9,100, who is looking like he fell apart after his, you know, real solid run that included the win at the match play. Just kind of blew up at the PGA Championship and then missed the week missed the cut the week after at the Charles Schwab, where he was supposed to be a really good play. T41 at the Memorial, then T49 at the U.S. Open. It was looking like he kind of went back to being crappier, but it was okay last week, finishing T14. 98th in projected fantasy points per round, 62nd in projected round score. I don't think this course really fits him whatsoever, you know, mostly doing it through short game and stuff. Just all of these plays in the 9K range are just garbage, and it's going to really just push everyone to Billy Horschel at 9K. The dude's been solid over his last five events. 92% of his cuts he's making, you know, over his last four. Events played 86%. Field rank, very good there. Does struggle on par 72. He's 59% field rank in 13 par 72 courses played. Don't really like that stat a whole lot, but his approach game has been solid for a long while now. He's gaining exactly one stroke over his last 10. That's pretty solid. You know, I saw him. He was religiously on that putting green. He was on the putting green more than anyone that I saw. Outside of that guy that I could not figure out the name of until I had left and found out it was Joey Garber. Kind of pulling for my man Garber here. I know he's actually a garbage DFS play, but he's part of the long hair legion. He's like right there with Tommy Fleetwood, like that kind of hair. Just some beautiful locks. So we got kind of that bro connection going on there. So anyway, back to the plays here. Billy Horschel, I imagine it gets popular. You know, 28-1. Better odds than three of the guys directly above him. Four of them, actually, if you include Snedeker. Better odds than Snedeker is $1,000 more than he is. So Billy Horschel, you should expect him to, you know, be pretty popular. 52nd in projected fantasy points per round, though. So maybe avoid him in GPP, play him in cash, that sort of play. I know it's like impossible to find anyone to play. I'm telling you, like, the way to do it this week, honestly, is like pick Dustin Johnson and a bunch of value plays. Like, that's how I'm gonna do it, or Matsuyama. It's gonna be chalky doing that, obviously, but I just really can't get behind any of these low-owned sort of plays down here. I just can't. So you've got Joaquin Niemann at $8,900. Met him, got to talk with him a little bit today. Signed a ball and gave it to me because he was trying to give it to this little girl. She didn't want nothing to do with it, I guess. She's like, here you go. Here you go, grown man. And I'm like, thank you. I treasure this so much. I tried to ask him what his thing of a stint meter is, and he was just like, I don't really know. I don't care. Like, and he's like a god-awful putter, right? So maybe that might have something to do with it. He's actually putted okay over his last 10 rounds, which is shocking. This is a guy that, over his last 50 rounds, loses several strokes. Not several strokes, but a third of a stroke on average. Not very good. This is a guy that I posted on my Twitter a little while ago. This guy four-putted from 3 feet. Not a very good putter by all means, but the putter's flipping, you know? I know it's mostly on putter or POA where we've been on recently. His finishes have been fine, but this is you know, his T5 last week was his first top 10, really his first top 25 finish in, like, I don't know, a very long time. All right. So he's been good recently over his last four events. Pretty solid, but, you know, go back further. Over his last 15 events played, 57% field rank. Also struggles a bit on both par 72s and weak fields. Just not great compared to all the guys around him. Like, literally everyone around him in salary is better than that. The game log looks nice, but I really do not mind fading him whatsoever. I was pretty much off of him for a little while there. I ended up playing him a bit in Showdown last week, and he helped me win some money there. So I might have to give him some IOU sort of rosters. I like to do that personally, but honestly, I don't think he's a very strong play. He's probably a very good fade there. Like, this week is the opposite of, like, a majors, where at a major, you want to play everyone. Here, I just want to fade everyone. Like, can I just make a lineup that has, like, three people in it, and then I give up? Like, it's just so hard to find guys to get behind. Another guy I met was Sungjae Im. I love his autograph. He has the best autograph. It's just, like, a little, like, it looks like, just, a, like, he learned how to just write letters, and just very neatly writes a little S-J-M. It almost looks like a girl's handwriting. This is adorable. Everyone else, their autographs looks like a doctor's or something. He's just, like, very nice. Very nice about it. So he's second in the field in projected fantasy points per round. If you look at why that is, the dude's number one in short par three scoring. Number eight in long par four scoring. Number nine in the field in short par five scoring. The dude is a birdie freak. That's what he does. He is insane with the birdies. Of all the studs, how about this? Of all the studs, almost all of them score better on FanDuel than DraftKings. Not M. M and Charlie Hoffman, the only guys above like $7,700 that score better on DraftKings and FanDuel. I guess co-cracked by a little bit, but M has always scored better on DraftKings and FanDuel. He's ranked second on DraftKings, eighth in projected FanDuel points per round. And it's because the dude bogeys a lot and birdies a lot. I know last week he was kind of carried by a real hot putter. And honestly, I saw him on the practice screens a lot, just trying to get Senpai to notice me there, and he finally did. The dude was rolling him in like crazy. He had that real rough streak over the last, a good stretch there. The dude plays like every week, so I didn't hound him too much. Just asked him for an autograph, and I was like, "Can I ask you one question?" And he was like, "Sure." So I asked him, "If you qualified for every event, would you play every single week?" And then he like sucks some air through his teeth, and he's like, "In America, yeah." I love it. I love Sungjae, and he was forced to take a week off recently at the U.S. Open, and I hope he plays every event like Lucas Glover has done over the last few years. Keegan Bradley, too, another guy that tends to play like every event, plays like 30 a year. He's going to have like 33, 35 events played by the end of the year. It is insane how often he plays. I mean, he's played 28 events already in his PGA Tour career, or just over the last year. And that's nutty, because he has just started, like, not too recently. The dude's a rookie. It's wild. He just plays every single week, and I love it. How many weeks off has he taken this year? I can look that up real quick. He has taken 1, 2, 3, 4... Nope. That, can't count that one. That was the Puerto Rico and the WGC, which were actually the same week. So the only weeks he took off were the U.S. Open, the Masters, WGC Mexico... And that's it. He's played every single event this year. It's insane. I love him. I love Sungjae so much. He's our dude. So all about him. He suits the course just so well. Double bogeys a lot, you know, like super GPP play. Don't play him in cash. He's like the GPP play. He's honestly like the Showdown play. Let's bring up Showdown real quick. Sort by top 5% of field rank. So it'll show the guys that... the percentage of the time they beat 95% of the field. He is fourth in the field. 17.8% of the time, he finishes in the top 5% in Showdown. That is Showdown cash money right there. Like, yes. We want that. He hates pars. He just hates parring, and I love him for it. You've got Bubba Watson at $8,700. Another guy that hates parring. Lately, he's hated doing well, I guess. Hasn't really performed well since the Masters. It's been really bad. His last four events. Crushes off the tee and stuff. Just losing a ton of strokes around the green recently. Over his last 10, he's lost like 0.8 strokes around the green. That's pretty bad, but maybe won't be as big of a factor this week. But really, don't really like Bubba too much. You've got a real value pocket right here. About to list off a bunch of good plays in a row. Rory Sabatini, $8,500. I called the Sabatini fade at the U.S. Open. He finished T43. It wasn't that great, but he keeps making cuts. He's on like some crazy made cut streak. He hasn't missed a cut since Pebble Beach. And in that span, he's made, 11 straight cuts. And, he had that stretch there, 10th, 18th, 5th, 6th, quality finishes. So the dude's freaking out. The dude's awesome with birdies, getting 2.2 birdies to the field, 22 fantasy points to the field, like some legit numbers. 9th in projected round score. Love him. And for $100 more, and what may be a little bit more ownership, actually, is Kevin Streelman. Just because his last six finishes, 15th, 4th, 31st, 45th, 6th, and 6th. A dude's crushing it. What I don't like about him, and why I like Sabatini better, is he is 66th in projected fantasy points per round, as where Sabatini is 11th. He's 40th in projected round score. Sabatini is 9th. Gotta go with Sabatini here. Plus, his form extends a little further. Streelman has really bad, long-term form. 57% field rank over his last 32 events that he's played over the last year. That's not very good at all. He had, for a while, he was just in the dumps. The thing that does stick out with Streelman is his approach game has been pretty nasty. Over the last 25 rounds, he's gaining over a stroke per round. He's losing off the tee over the last 10, but his irons have been pretty solid. And, it's been inconsistent. He has the highest inconsistency rating of anyone that I've talked about so far when it comes to his approach stats. So keep that in mind. It's not super steady. It's kind of all over the place, but he can randomly, if you look at his strokes gained, just round by round here. Last four rounds, he hasn't done anything better than gaining 0.8 strokes, but before then, 4.2, 3.3, 1.7. He is capable of putting up a ton of strokes gained approach, but it is a little bit wild. Sabatini seems like a slightly safer play to me, and I think he's going to be a little bit lower in ownership, but these guys are still going to get a lot of ownership. You got Victor Hovland, who made the cut again at the Travelers last week, following up that amazing 12th place finish at the U.S. Open, and before that, 32nd at the Masters, high amateur. Not a lot of data from him yet, so can't really look into it too much, but his driving accuracy seems pretty legit. Gaining a million strokes off the tee, and approach so far, just god-awful putting. So probably someone you want to attack in GPPs. Another guy, Jason Kokrak, $8,300. Was dead last week, and no one's going to play him now. But, still pretty solid. 17th in projected fantasy points per round. Has made, 92% of his cut still. So he could be a little bounce-back sort of candidate. Main thing he's losing strokes on is around the green. Just hemorrhaging strokes around the green, and putting too. Tee to green has been perfectly fine, so, at least tee to fairway. off the tee and approach, ball striking, he's been perfectly fine there. Aaron Wise, another guy, just a big GPP play, 14th in projected fantasy points per round, but, double bogeys a ton. Kevin Chui, who's been really putting it together recently after, a long stretch of just mediocre, if not just bad play from him. His fifth last week, still doesn't project out very well in fantasy scoring stats and stuff. But I do like him, and I don't like the next two guys we're talking about, because speaking of fantasy scoring, Dufner and Harmon ranked 110th and 113th in his field in projected fantasy points per round. They've both been a little hot over the last three or four events, but let's not forget about how freaking terrible they've been over the last year. Both of them are under 50%. And their last year of play, and that's over 30 events played for both of them. Harmon, it's been a while since he's been a top 10 machine, just not anymore. Harmon's usually pretty streaky, like a Russell Henley is, like a who's like, yeah, I just mentioned earlier that I was going to bring up here directly. Oh, Reavy, yeah, so like Reavy, just pretty streaky in his game, so maybe you might want to get on him. I'm just not that interested. He does look pretty good, like odds wise and stuff, but I'll go with a much lower owned play in Kyunghoon Lee, who finished 13th last week. Kind of sneaky there. Another thing with Harmon, 37% field rank in par 72s on the year. That's pretty bad. So moving down, you've got two Chucky H's at $7,800, and that's Charles Howell III and Charlie Hoffman. Charles Howell III, I'll see you in the winter. I'll see you at the Sony Open, or I'll start rostering you again, because I'm pretty much giving up on you. 52nd at Pebble Beach before then. Just a lot of missed cuts and stuff. I mean, he does this every year. Starts off with like 13 straight made cuts and then just like falls apart and then quits playing. Hoffman, however, really disappointed last week, and it was at a course where he crushes. He missed the cut pretty badly. So I'm kind of worried about that. You know, losing birdies to the field too. Not as many as Howell. Howell loses like 5 birdies to the field. He's like a par machine. So like, don't play Chucky 3 Sticks as much as you may love him. And I love the guy, but don't do it. And then Hoffman, just been pretty awful, you know, struggles a lot at par 72s, played 14 of them with a 46% field rank, 55% field rank over the last year. His stroke scan approach has been solid recently, but this is one of the few guys where I'm just not going to worry about that. He's just been just too piss poor for too long now. Moving on down here, Von Taylor at $7,600. He's been playing really steady golf. Snuck into a fourth place finish. It's weird for Von Taylor. Like, he doesn't really do this all too often. He won randomly a couple of years ago, but honestly, he's putting up some decent top 20 finishes, top 10 finishes. I mean, if you look at 18% of the time, he's in the top 10% of fields. That's pretty solid for someone like him. And then same price here, we got some other great plays: Mackenzie Hughes, Nick Watney, both in really good short term form. Mackenzie has actually been real sneaky. Runner-up at the Corrales Punta Canas, and 8th at the Charles Schwab, 14th in Canada, so really crushing these weak fields, and does well at par 72s as well. 22% of the time he's finishing in the top 10% of fields. That's a good number there. So liking them. Bud Cauley was awful last week, but still his approach stats looking fairly solid. You've got Matthew Wolf, you know, the new guy. Missed the cut by like a stroke last week. Has that funky swing and all, but he actually birdied. He didn't miss the cut. He MDF, but he did birdie every single par 5 last week. And you're going with all the par 5s this week, it might be an interesting place to sneak him in at. But again, low sample size with him, very risky play. Bombs it off the tee. He's going to be a nice little bomber moving forward. You got Martin Laird, who's just been putting it together recently, making cuts and stuff. Don't mind him. And then we've got one of our core values down here, $7,500. Looking like he was going to be first-round leader last week. Was the one guy in the AM wave on Thursday, which ended up playing like a half stroke harder than the PM wave, but he was definitely the class of the AM wave with that immediate 4-under start. Did much better than everyone else there, I think, until Ryan Armour ended up passing him there. But still, another solid finish for him. Is on a pretty good streak of good finishes, and his irons are piping hot at this point. Gaining 1.25 strokes approach over his last 10, 0.7 over his last 25. Some really good stuff there. Just hasn't really been putting as well recently, but I could easily flip. Don't mind that at all. I've got Harold Varner III. Good stat with him is 28% of the time he's finishing in the top 10% of fields. So he does have that upside that we're kind of looking for here. Good at getting like some top 20s, but his downside also is not great. Only makes 50% of his cuts compared to Malnati's 75%. Malnati, I see getting a little popular, maybe hold him just for cash. I don't know, but Varner seems like a decent pivot here. Laird also, even
wolf if you're wild like that. Moving down to the lower 7K range. Max Homa, he's honestly been looking pretty solid. I know he missed the cut last week at the Travelers, but still has made 83% of his cuts recently. Just won not too long ago at Wells Fargo. Very, very, very good approach numbers, and they've been super consistent for a while now. Hits it over 300 yards off the tee. Double bogeys under 1% of the time. A little bit better at gaining birdies than the guys around him. So I like the Homa play at $7,300. Also JJ Spahn at $7,400. Just some good approach play from him recently. You've got moving down a little bit further here. Last week's winner, almost, Zach Sucker. I guess he was not a sucker play. It looked like he was going to fall apart there and just, you know, regress to what we all thought he was. But nope, came runner-up. Had a really solid weekend, actually, surprisingly, after missing the cut horribly at the Canadian Open. And he low-key has some pretty decent finishes recently at the, not the Web.com Tour, the Korn Ferry Tour. Yes, 90s band Korn is, they're a freak on a leash, and that leash is attached to some boat ferry thing, so that's their new tour, I guess. So Sucker just cheap. Statistically he's fine. Not a ton of events played. The only four measured events played so far in the year. But looks like he's not like a young guy. He's been on the PGA Tour before, and he was a scrub for several years. But he just graduated back from the Web.Korn Ferry Tour, so that might have been the best event we'll ever see from Sucker, but I don't know. It's still a bit early to tell with him at the current, you know, point in his career. We've seen guys, you know, go from being scrubs to being good. Look at Kisner. He's $9,000 when DraftKings was first made. He was a $4,000 golfer every single week. Yes, they had $4,000 golfers back then, and Kisner was like at the bottom of X. He was horrible. Wyndham Clark. This is an interesting play at $7,100. Fifth in projected fantasy points per round. Why is that? We go over to my man Wyndham Clark. 12th in short par fours. And against kind of a key stat here this week. 8th in short par fives and 14th in long par fours. This is a very good, you know, just a really nice course setup for him. His ownership has been dirt low. So I really like that in GPP. 81% field rank in par 72 events. He loves his par 72s. Finishes in the top 10% of fields 25% of the time. And he still has that very misleading disqualification that shows up on the DraftKings game log as like a last place finish. But he was actually doing really well in that event. So I've kind of been sneak rostering him for that reason alone recently. And I'll keep doing that until it's off the game log, because I like making little plays like that. I don't know. Steven Yeager, $7,100, throwing down some Yeager bombs. Just three solid finishes in a row, top 30s for him. Looks like, problem is, yeah, it's all around the green, actually. I don't like that play now that I look at it. Actually, probably a decent fade. And it's not like he's a good player by any means. He's super scrub usually, like Korn Ferry level there, but just three solid finishes in a row from him. I guess he's just chipping everything in. I don't know. He's actually gaining strokes in all categories over his last 10, so I do like seeing that when someone's gaining in all categories, but you want that more like a challenging course. This one, I don't know, this is a lot more straightforward. Last week's darling Sebastian Munoz rates out great again, third in projected fantasy point scoring. He was crap last week, which sucked, but he's actually second in projected FanDuel scoring. So he's mainly because he's third in short par fives. Only 59 short par fives played, so the sample size is a little low with Munoz. I just so happens to not really play them all too much, but so don't mind Munoz whatsoever here. Missed the cut. Everyone's going to be off him, and not really many people played him last week, even though he was coming off of an 11th and a 10th. So Munoz could be sneaky there. And this is a whole little pocket of value here, 7K. You've got Matt Jones, who's just making a lot of cuts, 77% of his cuts made. Nick Taylor, also another just cut maker guy, 73% of his cuts made. Cameron Tringali, just been trending in the right direction over his last like five events. And Troy Merritt, who's been gaining a lot of strokes approach, along with Tringali. Tringali also a lot of strokes gained approach for him. What do all four of these guys have in common? They all finished T71 last week. Yeah. That I just wanted to point that out because I thought that was interesting. Adam Long at $6,900. He won this year, if you can remember that. Tons of fantasy points per hole. Looks like a GPP upside kind of guy. Only makes 35% of his cuts, so keep that in mind. He is a cut misser, but he's made four of his last five. He's turned it around. You know, he won at like 600-700 to 1, and then after that, just missed a bunch of cuts. He's like a rookie. He did well in the Korn Ferry Tour. So it's not like he's all that bad. He had some really quality finish. I think he had like a T2 or T3, a couple of them. So he's not like some like rando scrub completely. Also the same price here at $6,900. Hank Lebioda, also made four of his last five cuts. Looked really good at the Canadian Open, which, you know, I kind of like to see that. 82% of his cuts made. Beats 50% of the field 75% of the time, and that is better than pretty much every scrub out there. Of course, he's only played 16 events, but still, it's quite encouraging to see. Sepp Straka at $6,900, another guy that kind of piques my interest there. GPP only, but some good approach stats. Moving on down, Scott Brown at $6,700. He's been playing a little bit better recently, but I just want to... This is my story of the day, I guess, so... Everyone just up and left this putting green. They had two putting greens, and the one got like a shadow from a tree and moved over it. So everyone quit putting on there because that was going to play a little differently than all the other greens, which are going to be like 100% exposed to the sun. No shadows in play there. And Scott Brown just kind of left his bag there, and it was there for like an hour and a half. I'm like, Scott, your clubs. Oh no, has anyone seen Scott? where he left his clubs. Ah, then after a while, I see him come back. He's like, oh, that's where I left them fuckers. Oh, man. Sorry for the bad language there, if anyone didn't like that. I got to hear Robert Streb, actually, just cussing like a sailor. I don't know. I guess that's just what he does. He wasn't even mad at anything. He was just cussing like crazy. I love going to the events on the Tuesdays and Wednesdays. When they're not really serious about it, especially their pro-am. It's a good day to like bring kids and stuff, because they're real laid back. You get to kind of see their personalities come out and stuff. So moving down through the junk part of this field, Sam Ryder at $6,600, almost like a core play here. He has withdrawn not too long ago at the RBC Heritage, but he does have some top five finishes at the Shriners, Safeway Open, and the John Deere Classic, which is another birdie fest. And this dude is insane. He leads the entire field in fantasy points per hole. This is my theory. My theory is that this dude just really likes to play, courses with extra par fives, like the par 72 courses. And he does really well at them because he has like more par fives played than like other guys in his range. And he's really good at them. So I just like the guy also, you know, makes 70% of his cuts, ranks 9th in projected fantasy points, per round. Yeah, just really solid across the board, very good and consistent approach stats, he's been losing a lot of strokes around the green recently, and that's kind of another angle I kind of want to look at this week, maybe playing those guys. So do not mind me, some Ryder. Yeah, he's also just like an odds to pricing value, and he's drifted quite a bit from 170 to 150. He's going to be a really nice little play down here, and I don't know how popular he'll get exactly. You got Sean Stefani at 6,500. Now we're really just desperate for plays here. His form has been bad, but his stroke scan approach has been on fire. That's pretty much the only reason I'm pointing this guy out. Maybe a few years ago, I was playing him more consistently, but he hasn't really been anywhere near consistent as of late. And down here, it pretty much gets like really, really bad after this. You can maybe play Brandon Harkins. You know, he's been just, I don't know, actually, he hasn't broken the top 50 in his last five events, even though he's made the cut in each of those. So actually, that's not interesting for me. Maybe Josh Teeter at $6,400. You're really just kind of going out for on a limb here, but he has made some cuts recently. Not bad at all at like strokes gained approach. Am I looking at the right one? Yeah, strokes gained approach. Solid with that. 37th in projected fantasy points per round. Again, you're digging through the discount barrel here. He also has a 0% a top 10 rate, so keep that in mind. And anywhere lower, honestly, it just gets kind of too bad to play. But it is a crap field, so if you want to take a shot at any of these like 0% owned guys, be my guest. Maybe Seth Reeves. This guy is like a par 5 specialist. 24th in projected fantasy scoring per round, but 117th in projected round score. So you know this guy is all about the par 5s. Hits it like 312 off the tee. Really bad at everything else, but man, he's just particularly good at not only par 5s, but like showdown too. He's actually got a lot of good showdown performances in the past. Yeah, it's hard to really roster anyone. I would like to point out that DraftKings use their gigantic brains to give Smiley Kaufman a salary of $6,100. And not $6,000, which is very interesting to me. They have Michael Kim at $6,000, who has like won an event not too long ago. Ted Potter Jr. also, minimum price, won an event like a year and a half ago, but still. Smiley Kaufman has missed like 10 million cuts in a row, and he goes to web.com tour, still misses the cut, goes to Asia, still misses the cut. This dude is horrible. He has no idea how to golf anymore. Like, so the Monstars came and just, they stole his powers or something like this. I don't know what he's doing. He's like the new version of Stephen Bowditch, but yeah, interesting pricing there, DraftKings. Interesting. All right, so I'm so tired, I'm going to bed. We ended up going just over an hour, like I had guessed. So remember, guys, if you want to check out the research station, check out everything for yourself, dig deep into the stats. There are way more stats than you could handle, honestly, unless you're absolutely crazy. And if that's the case, I mean, shoot, go at it. Be my guest at dfsarmy.com, promo code TACO. Get that lifetime 20% bonus on sign up for the rest of your life, and it supports the pod. It supports me, but I do the pod, so yeah, it supports the pod. It's very supportful. Me like you the support, so. That'll do it for the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Should be interesting to see how this all turns out, and I hope it turns out profitably for you guys. I will see you Army members later.